Okay, Parshas Korach. So this is the fourth year that we have now learned Parshas Korach together. I'm not sure how many of you have been here for the first three. I have. So I was just going over last night. So out of all these shiurim, I have this habit of always starting in the middle of the story. I'm doing different aspects of the story, whether or not it was Moshe's reaction to Korach's rebellion, whether or not it was Hashem's reaction to Moshe's reaction. And I realized we've never actually done what the rebellion was about. We always, I would listen to myself in past years, and we always would say, well, you all know about the rebellion, so we're going to start in the middle of the story. We've never actually learned what is the issue. And it's fascinating because the entire rebellion is all of three verses. And even in those three verses, there's really not a whole lot of information given. So what I'd like to do this morning is let's learn those three verses and then expand upon them as Rashi and the Ramban do, trying to flesh out exactly what this story was about, since the Torah is very sparse with details, as often is the case. So let's start from the beginning, page 820. So those, we'll read the three together, and then we'll put together a bunch of questions that we would have on the three. Now, I'm sure will be familiar with a lot of the things that we'll say because you've heard them over the years in different isolated contexts. We'll put them all together, God willing, this morning. Let's read the three, and then we'll put together some questions that we would have. Trying our best to pretend as if we were reading this for the first time.
Thank you.
Without all of our prior knowledge about what this story and what this rebellion is about. Page 820. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzar ben Kohath ben Levi. And Korach, the son of Yitzar, the son of Kohath, who was a son of Levi. So this right away tells us how many generations we are, starting from Levi himself. Levi was, of course, the son of Yaakov, one of the original 12 sons. So Levi had a son Kohath. Kohath had a son Yitzar. Now we're referring to Korach, a great-great-grandson of No, just a great-grandson, right? Just a great-grandson of Levi himself. The Dason va'avirim. So Korach took with Dason and Avirim, B'nei Eliyav, V'on ben Peles, B'nei Reuven, together with On ben Peles, the son of Reuven. So we have here another classic example for all those of you reading on the left-hand side of the page in English. Another classic example where Art Scroll has establish themselves not as a translation but as a commentary. What does the word vayikach mean? That's correct. Vayikach means and he took. The word kach, the shorish, the root of the word kach is to take, which would mean that the opening phrase of this parsha should be translated as vayikach Korach and Korach took. How does the Art Scroll read?
Separated
himself. That's correct. Now that's going to be based, we'll see on Rashi. That's not what the word means. The word means that Korach took. So leaving the pasuk in its original form, what we would then have would be the opening pasuk would read as follows. And Korach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, took. And Dothan and Aviram, the sons of Eliyav. And On ben Peles, the son of Reuven. What questions would we be left with from the first pasuk?
What's he taking away?
What's he taking? There's no direct object. The article is going to be dealing with that, obviously. That's where they got the translation from. But the problem with the verse is there's no direct object to what Korach took. We are introduced to this subject, to this entire rebellion, to this entire parsha, with a phrase of Vayikach Korach. And Korach took. And there's no end of that sentence. There's no and what did he take? It doesn't say anything about what he took. It just says that he took. And who else is with him? Dason and Aviram, who are sons of Eliyav, and On ben Peles, who were the sons of Reuven. And they are all with him in whatever Korach took. Okay, let's just get the whole three verses before we break it down too much. Beis, second pasuk. Vayakumu lufnei Moshe. And they stood before Moshe. Vanashim mi bnei Yisrael chamishim u'masayim, together with 250 men from the children of Israel, nisiyei eda, kriyei moed anshei shem. And these 250 men were leaders, They were those who were generally summoned for meetings when there were important things to discuss. They were summoned, and they were men of renown. They were important people. They were anshei shem. Summarizing verse 2, what would we have? So we have Korach took, and he's with Dathan and Aviram, and On ben Peleth, and they stood before Moshe together with 250 people who were significant people, who were important people, and they all stood before Moshe. Right, we've now read two of the three verses of the entire story, and what piece of information are we missing? What in the world is going on? So the entire rebellion is going to be described in three verses. The first two verses tell us seemingly nothing in terms of like what's happening here. What's going on in the story? All we know is that Korach took, separated, and we know it's with Dathan and Aviram and On, and they stood before Moshe together with these 250 people. Who are all of these people? What are they doing here? Why are they here? Who are all these players? But now they're standing before Moshe. 3. Vayikahalu al Moshe ve'al Aharon. And they gathered together against Moshe and Aharon. Vayomru aleihem. And they said to them, Rav lachem. It is too much for you. Ki chol ho'edah kulam kedoshim. Uvisaycham Hashem. Umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. What is their argument? Rav lachem, it is too much for you. Ki chol ha'edah kulam kedoshim, for the entire assembly, all of the people are holy. Uvesoicham Hashem, and Hashem is among them. Madua tisnasu al kahal Hashem, why do you exalt yourselves over the congregation of Hashem? How would we summarize in plain English what it is that they say against Moshe and against Aaron? Let's break it down even further. How many different things are they saying to Moshe and to Aaron?
3.
Okay, how would we break down their argument?
That the people are all so holy.
Okay. So they're making a statement. The people are all holy.
And why are you consider yourself over everybody else?
Okay, then they have a question. Right? Madua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. Why do you exalt yourselves over the congregation of Hashem? So they start off with the statement, it's too much for you. Then they back up their statement with what their argument's coming from. We are all holy. So why do you exalt yourself over Hashem? That's it. We just read the entire rebellion.
Over the congregation
of Hashem.
Yeah.
Why do you exalt yourself? This is the entire rebellion. Moshe and Aharon see in this all they need to see. The next verses, they fall on their face. He speaks to Korach and he says, in the morning Hashem will make it be known, and he gives them the whole thing. He then tries to appease them, but the rebellion of Korach and his followers has just been summarized in those three verses, the two verses which do really nothing more than summarize who the players are. And then the third verse, in which we have their statement, which is a three-part statement of, it's too much, we are all holy, why do you exalt yourself over the congregation of Hashem? Based on just a simple reading of what we have, what would we say their argument is? What are they complaining about, so to speak?
That Moshe's not really worthy, and there's holier people that can lead the nation better than him. From their opinion.
Okay, that Moshe is not worthy.
Yeah, he's not worthy, yeah.
Okay, well, they're not saying that he's not worthy. There's not a complaint that Moshe is not worthy. What's really their complaint?
We're worthy, too.
We're worthy, too, right? In other words, you can either, whenever you get into a fight with somebody, you can either knock them down by saying, you're not so good, or you could push yourself up. So they're not necessarily pushing down anyone. They're just saying, we're also worthy. Who are they complaining against? It's a fascinating nuance in these three verses.
I think it's complaining against Hashem.
Okay, where do you
I think it's interesting that they say, I'm going to back up, sorry, cancel that, that Hashem is among them. So as if to say, why do we need you? No?
Yeah. Right? They're saying Hashem is
among
us. We are all holy.
I'm surprised that they would
say
that.
So who is their complaint against?
I would have thought Moshe and Aharon.
Okay, why would you have thought Moshe and Aharon?
I mean,
Because Moses,
he's addressing them, saying, "Why are you separate? You know, why are you over us? We can do this too. We're all holy people. Why should you be over us?"
So, in that scenario, then what they would be arguing on is against. If we say that way, is both Moshe now? What position does Moshe have?
Communicator with Hashem. I mean, laws,
was that an appointed position? Did he naturally fall? Like, how did Moshe get his position? I mean, I it wasn't like a formality of that as much as I don't know. What's Aaron's position? Aaron's a Kohen Gadol. How did that happen?
Moshe said that Hashem appointed him. And this word, why do you exalt yourself? I keep thinking of Aaron when I see the word exalt. I don't exactly know what it means, but so I think they're complaining against Aaron.
Yes, sir. They're kind of complaining against the whole system, the way it's set up. So
okay, so we're going to have to work this through. And is it a their complaint, you know, here's the nuance, which I'm not sure if we're going to come up with a great answer by the end of the day, because it's been bothering me, but I have to share it, even though because it's been bothering me so much. In verse 2, who are they complaining against? What's happening in the beginning of verse 2?
It looks like they're complaining to Moshe.
Good. What happens in the beginning of verse 3?
It's not a bad idea.
So in verse 2, they stood before Moshe
and
Moshe alone.
Yes.
In verse 3, they gathered together against Moshe and Aharon. So Aharon is introduced when we actually hear what they have to say. That's where the Torah says what they were gathered against also included Aharon. And what they have to say is, it is too much for you. For the entire assembly, all of us are holy. Why are you exalting yourself over the congregation of Hashem? Okay, very little here as far as the actual text. We clearly have a complaint against a standing up against Moshe. I think that's really what we're going to see now. They're standing up against Moshe in terms of the authority of Moshe, and then their complaint is going to be lodged against Moshe and Aharon, in the sense of how Aharon is going to himself fit into this. Okay, let's work through some of these things that we have in these psukim, as Rashi and the Ramban and others work this through. Okay, let's start with our first phrase, Vayikach Korach. Vayikach Korach. So Rashi understands, Rashi and the Ramban have a little slight difference exactly what to do with this. With this phrase, because the problem again is, what did he take? The word vayikach means that he took. What did he take? The Torah doesn't say. There's no direct object as to what he took. So Rashi is going to offer two explanations. Rashi starts as follows, end of the first line in the Rashi. Lokach es atzmo litzad echad. He took himself to one side. In other words, there's no direct object. Vayikach Korach usually means, and Korach took. Took what? See, you take something. There's nothing there. So Rashi explains, which is based on the Targum of the Unkelus, is what the translation of Unkelus is. He took himself to one side. Lios nechlach mitocha eda le'oirer ala kuhuna. To separate himself, to distance himself from everybody else, to fight, to argue over the kuhuna. And that's what the word lokach, it's a reference to himself, that he took himself over to one side and separated himself from everything else, which is where Archer got its word from, that he separated himself, meaning that he took himself to the other side to fight. Now, Vimaral, when he explains this, Rashi says that what Rashi is saying is that in terms of the fight, there was a concept of a dispute, that the dispute was himself taking himself to the other side. We don't use the word vayikach every time the Torah describes a battle or a fight between two people. When two people have an argument, this is not the word that's used. This is a very poetic way to describe a fight. I mean, what words are the Torah using to describe this fight? That he had an argument, that he took himself and separated himself from the rest of the community. That's not how we describe two people getting into a fight or an argument. When one wants to challenge the authority of others, says now, the reason why this is done here is because what he was fighting over, as Rashi says, is the kahuna, is the priesthood, is the establishment of who is going to be the Kohen. Now, before this point, we've read several times over the last couple of weeks that it used to be the firstborns who were going to serve as the Kohanim. They were the ones who were going to do the service, and they lost that privilege, and it was given to Aharon and to his sons as the Kohanim. So when Korach now fights about this issue, he's really taking on the entire institution of the Kahuna, which is representative of all of the Jewish people. The Kohen and the priest now represents the Jewish people. So the Maharal says this is a different type of fight. This is not a fight between two individuals. This is a fight of an individual who is, so to speak, literally separating himself from the klal, taking himself out from the multitudes of people, from the rest of the Jewish people. They're represented by the Kohanim, all behind Moshe, his authority to establish the Aharon as that appropriate Kohen. When he took up this fight, he was literally separating himself, not just having it two individuals fighting, but he's one person taking himself entirely aside, moving against the entire grain of the rest of the people. Therefore, he says, that's Rashi's first interpretation of Vayikach, that he literally took himself aside. That's a much more difficult or significant type of battle. When you have a community, in any community, take our community just as an example, so you could have many disputes amongst individuals within the community. They're fighting over an aliyah, they're fighting over this, or who knows what. You can name 1,000 things that people have a dispute about. But the dispute that they're having are two individuals within a community who have a disagreement about whatever it is that they're fighting about. But when an individual in the community takes on something in which he's distancing himself from the entirety of the community, he's separating himself, saying, everybody's here and I'm arguing on whatever it is that they stand for or whatever it is that they are part of, that's where the Torah uses the word vayikach. He took himself out, took himself away and put himself on the other side of everybody else, and that's what Korach was representing here. That's Rashi's first interpretation of vayikach. And then Rashi brings a second interpretation of what Vayikach is. Dovar Ach, Rashi says, in the brackets, two lines from the bottom of that first Rashi, it's four lines down. Vayikach Korach Moshach Roshei Sanhedra Shebohem Bidvarim. He convinced the 250 people who are going to be listed in the next Pasuk, the direct object that's missing in the first Pasuk, what did he take? It's referring to the group of 250 that are going to be introduced in the next Pasuk. He took them. What does it mean that he took them? So Rashi uses the language of Moshach Bidvarim. He convinced them with words. Literally, the words of Rashi means he pulled them with words. And that's what Rashi is dealing with, the word of Vayikach, and he took them. And he brings example of a kachas Aharon, where Hashem uses a similar language to Moshe when he says to Moshe, kachas Aharon, take your brother Aharon and put him in the position as the Kohen Gadol. Didn't mean physically take Aharon and move him. It means talk to him and get him to convince him to go and take up the position. So the word vayikach was the convincing that Korach did to the 250 individuals. The Maharal says on this, and again in explaining this Rashi, where we use the language of Vayikach, that he took them with words, to explain a very fascinating idea. Generally, when you take something, we would think that what it means to take is to physically pick up something and to take it. A human being, says Maharal, is comprised of two basic components. Obviously, could be many more, but we can look at a human being in many different ways. We can look at his physical being. All of you are physically a body sitting in this room that can be felt and touched, your person. And then we are much more than that. We can use the word soul, intellect, personality, but there's an aspect of our being which is not in any way subject to the physical bodies that we are limited by. Whether or not a person becomes physically incapacitated or not, they are who they are. Their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, their personality, that's who they are. So when you say, which one is the primary aspect of a person? Is it the physical being, or is it their emotional state, their personality, their thought processes? So says the Maharal, explaining this Rashi, if you want to take a person, so there are two ways to take a person. I can physically take you from point A and move you to point B, and I have now taken you, just like I can take a book. I've picked you up, carried you, and dropped you off in a new location. Says Maharal, but Rashi is telling us here, or the Chumash is really telling us, that's not what a person is. You can't take, that's not what we refer to when we say, I took a person. A book is only taken if it's physically moved from point A to point B. What does it mean to take a person? It means to convince him of something. It means to in Rashi's language, mefates ha'adam, to literally seduce a person's mind, to convince them of something that he didn't think of otherwise. If I get you to think of something different than you did before, then we use the language, I have now taken you. Because the Iker Ha'adam, the primary essence of a person, is not his physical being. It's his seichel, it's his thought process, it's what he believes, it's what he thinks, it's what he feels. And if I convince you to do something, on that we use the word, I have now taken you from one place to another. So that the Torah says, Vayikach Korach, says Rashi in his second explanation, Korach took these 250 leaders, doesn't mean that he physically picked them up and moved them, but he seduced them. He convinced them to join in his rebellion, and in taking their mind, we say, he took them. Because that, says the Maral, explaining this Rashi, that's the Iker Ha'adam, HaNefesh HaMaskelas, which is, that's what's in your Rishus, and if I take that from you, and convince you to do something that you didn't otherwise want to do, I'm considered as having taken you.
Now, does that apply today? Let's say yeshivas, perhaps, or other types of communities?
The idea applies, in other words, I don't know exactly, it applies in the sense of, whenever I impose my will or my mind against yours in a way in which it was done with deception, in which I've convinced you of some type of argument, that would be that language of vayikach. I have taken the person, not physically. It doesn't mean that I physically took him, it means I took you. In that sense, that's totally true. I don't know exactly what you're referring to.
Take you as a sucker.
I guess, sort of. In terms of, when you pull the wool over somebody's eyes, that would be, we would apply that phrase.
But we just used it before, for Kachemoshet Aaron.
Right, in other words, I should clarify that. In other words, there, Aaron didn't want to go. Rashi himself used that example, that's exactly right. Aaron didn't want to go. Aaron said, I wasn't worthy, I'm not capable of being in this position. So Hashem says to him, Kachas Aaron, Mashchehu Bedvarim, is what Rashi says over there. Convince him with words, take him with words, you're roi for this, you're fit, you're appropriate, thank you very much, it makes sense for you to go. And therefore, that was that same idea where Aaron didn't want to go, and Moshe convinces him to go. So anytime I can get you to change your mind, is the language of Kach. That is correct. Okay, continues Rashi. Who's this Dasan Vavir? So we have Korach, and we're going to get back to why we give his entire lineage here as well, as he's the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi. We'll get back to that in a moment. And who's with him? Dasan and Aviram. Says Rashi, who are Dasan and Aviram? That's now almost towards the bottom of the page inside Rashi. Bishvil Shaya Shevet Ruven Shori Bechaniyosam Teimana. The tribe of Ruven, as they would travel, was towards the south, which was in the same area as the sons of Kohaz, where Korach was from the tribe of Levi. Therefore, Oy LeRasha, Oy LeShcheino. Woe is to the evil one, woe is to his neighbor. How did Dasan and Aviram get involved over here? What complaint did they have? Korach is going to complain. Korach was from the son of Levi. He's going to have some type of complaints about having been shafted as far as being a Kohen. But Dasan and Aviram are from the tribe of Reuven. Where are they joining in to this particular complaint? Says Rashi, Oy LeRasha, Oy LeShcheino. When you have a wicked person, so he's going to pull around him the people who are closest to him. So they were the ones who got brought into this. As the Ramban points out, their complaint is going to be a little bit of a variation of a complaint. Later on in the story, when Moshe tries to appease them, and in verses 12 and 13, you'll see, and he tries to get him to come off of this rebellion, their complaint is it not enough that you have brought us from a land flowing with milk and honey to die in the wilderness, and did not bring us to the land that you said was flowing with milk and honey? You took us out of Egypt. They use that same language, which flowed with milk and honey, which is the language that, of course, the Torah uses to describe Eretz Yisrael. And you didn't actually bring us to that land, and now you want to try to dominate over us. So the Ramban writes, their main complaint was that they were all going to die in the wilderness, that you've brought us out here to die, and they got swept up in this because they were the closest to Korach. Korach had his complaint, which we'll see further in terms of exactly what he was complaining about, and they get involved in this as well. Okay, let's now read the next Rashi. It's a long Rashi, but I'm sure it's quoted often in different parts, so let's actually read it in its entirety and add some other points to it from the Maharal. Says Rashi, I'm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom, to find a final inside the first column. Ma ra Korach lachloik emosh. So what did Korach see, asks Rashi, to get involved in this dispute? Where the Torah tells us so little information. They gather with the 250, we haven't even introduced the 250, but there yet. Rashi asks, what did Korach see that he got himself involved in this? Says Rashi, Niskane al Nisiuso shalot Elitzofan ben Uziel. He was Niskane, he became jealous of the Nesius of Elitzofan ben Uziel. As Rashi explains, we'll talk it out outside first. The Mefarshim explained that this is why the Torah goes out of its way to give us the whole lineage of Korach, ben Yitzar, ben Kehos. Why is he ben Yitzar? Why is it so important for us to know that he's the son of Yitzar? So Kehos had four sons. Kehos had four sons, and Amram, who was the oldest of the four sons, Amram, as we'll recognize, was the father of Moshe and Aharon. So Kehos was one of the three sons of Levi. There were three principal tribes. So to speak, the tribe of Levi was subdivided into the three sons of Kehos and Merari and Gershon. They were the three sons of Levi had the subdivided the different parts of the Mishkan that they were all responsible for. So within Kehos, the Nasi, the leader of that group, was established by Moshe to be Elitzofan. Now Elitzofan was a son of the fourth of the four sons of Kehos himself. So Korach was a little bit bothered because he felt he got shafted. The oldest of the four sons of Kehos was Amram. His children were Moshe and Aharon, and they were the Melech, they were the leader, as well as the Kohen Gadol. He was the son of the next son out of the four. Yitzhar was the second oldest of the four sons. So it would have been logical, said Kehos, if you now need to choose a leader of this family unit, and the oldest of the four sons already got Moshe and Aharon, so then the second of the four sons should be given the leadership of the tribe, and that would be me. Except Moshe passed over son number two, passed over son number three, and gave it to the son of son number four, which is Elitzofan. He was the one who actually became the leader, says Rashi, and Korach took offense at this. Korach was jealous of that. Miroi litol esashnia. Who would be most fitting to take the second in command? Lo ani. Shouldn't it be me? Shani ben Yitzar, shehu sheni l'Amram. I am the son of Yitzar, who was the second son after Amram, and yet he went all the way to the baby of the four children and gave his children the leadership roles. Hareini cholik alohu mevatel es divar. Therefore, I am going to argue on him and be mevatel his words. Now, this is an important Rashi for a couple of different points. Number one, as Reb Chaim Shmulevitz points out, there's a mishnah in Pirkei Avos that lists a couple of things which are what we say, motzien es ha'adam min ha'olam, which take a person out of his world. One of those three is kinah. Kinah, taiva, and kavod. Kinah is jealousy, taiva is desire, and kavod is honor. Are motzien es ha'adam min ha'olam. They just take a person out of his world. What does it mean to take a person out of his world? There's a world of reality that we live in. All of us have. There is a reality that we all exist in. Those three things have an ability to just you like leave that world. You're no longer functioning in the world of reality, the regular rules that apply, logic that applies. You leave that sense of stability and structure, and you're just out of the world, out of your own world. And one of those things is kinah, is jealousy. And so Reb Chaim Shalevitz points out, what the Rashi is here quoting from Chazal, the Ramban here quotes the same statement from the sages, that what Korach couldn't handle was the appointment of Elitzofan, his nephew, but it was a nephew from a younger brother than he was the son from, was jealous that he was one appointed as the leader. So what does he do? So he says, I'm going to take on Moshe. Now what we're going to see is what he takes Moshe on is not the issue at hand. The issue at hand, where is Korach jealous from, as Chazal tells? The sages say where he was jealous from was the appointment of the leader of his little small family tribe. He thought it should have been him, and he has good reason to, in an objective way, if you just look at it from who's oldest, it makes sense. Moshe, who was working through the word of Hashem, had a greater insight into the actual players, and maybe this youngest child of the younger brother was more qualified. We don't know. All we know is that Hashem chose that child to be the leader. Korach has an issue with that. And he says, I'm going to argue with Moshe because of this jealousy. But he doesn't tackle that issue. That's not where his rebellion comes. It's going to come somewhere totally separate in a different area where it's going to be. And what would it make sense to take on Moshe Rabbeinu? Is it a logical thing to think at this point in the desert that you could take on Moshe's authority, that he's making things up on his own? But it's motzi etz adam min olam. It entirely takes a person out of the world of rational and reasonable thought once a person gets bitten with the jealousy bug. Now, Rashi is going to continue because Korach has the following issue. He's jealous, but he's not going to take on Moshe in that issue because most of us are like that in the sense of if we're jealous about a certain thing, but we don't want to show how small we are and how jealous we are about these things, so we don't actually take up the issue in that. We find something much bigger and more noble to start a fight on rather than the little smallest of all the little issues that we have in life that we are jealous over that we don't want to actually let anybody know that we're actually jealous over that. So we ignore that and we go to something bigger. So Rashi says, Ma'asa. So what did he do? He didn't want to take on Moshe for what was really bothering him. So he comes up with something else. Let's see how Rashi continues to describe this. So he gathers these 250 heads of the Sanhedrin. Ruban Mishavet, Ruvain Shechena. Most of them were from the tribe of Ruvain, which was his neighbor, as Rashi mentioned earlier. Oyla Rosh, Oyla Shechena. When you're close to a wicked person, you get caught up with all of his wickedness. Skipping down to the next two lines down. Vihil Bishon Taliso Shekulon Tcheles. And he address them up in talisos, in clothing, in shirts, and garments that were entirely made of tcheles. Tcheles, of course, is the color of the dye that was put on the strings of the tzitzis. And he had these 250 leaders of the Sanhedrin all wear that garment. Bo'u ve'omdu lifnei Moshe, he brought them all before Moshe. Amrulon said to them, Talis shekula shel tcheles, chayeves betzitzis o petura. And he asked them, a talis, a beged, a piece of clothing that is entirely made up of tcheles. The entire garment is the color of the cloth, is dyed in the color that we normally would make a tcheles string for the tzitzis from. Would you need to put the tzitzis or not on such a garment? That was his question. Amar lahem chayavis. So Moshe said, yeah, of course we'd be obligated. The Torah says every four-cornered garment needs to have tzitzis on it. Doesn't matter that the entire garment is made of the tcheles color or not. Hischilu l'sachek alav. So they started to laugh. Efsher talis shel min acher chut echad shel tcheles poitra. If it's a regular color and only one string of tcheles would exempt it, would fulfill its obligation. So if I have a garment which is entirely full of tcheles, it would also need a string of tcheles. Why should it? How could that be? How could if one string would fulfill the obligation of the entire garment that's white or any other color? So if the garment itself is already that color, why would it need these strings? That's his argument. The Medrash, which Rashi does not quote, says that he makes a similar argument about a room full of svarim. Does it need to have a mezuzah or not? To which Moshe said, of course it needs a mezuzah. So he started to laugh. If a little scroll on the door will fulfill the obligation of an empty room, certainly if the room is already entirely filled with books, why would we need an additional little scroll on the doorpost? Okay, that's his argument. Says the Maral, when he addresses this rabbi, what did Korach think the halacha was? I mean, Korach asked the question. He brings all of these people in their garments before Moshe. And he says, Moshe, what's the law? Do they need to wear tzitzis on such a garment or not? Does a room like this need to have? What did Korach think he was going to say? Did Korach think he was going to say it is obligated? Did he think it was not obligated? Where did he think he was going with this? If he had reason that it should be obligated, if he thought it made sense, then that's what Moshe would answer, and there's no reason to laugh. And if he didn't think it made sense, maybe he would have suspected that Moshe would have said it doesn't need. How did he know Moshe? What was his thought process? So the Maral says, he thought it would not need. He was sure of that. Because what's his argument going to be for as far as the text and earth? He's really jealous about the appointment of the leader. But what's his argument going to be in the Chumash? What's the one thing that the text actually tells us his argument is? All of the people are holy. Why do you exalt yourself over the people of Hashem? So he comes with an argument to say, what he thought would have been the rule, the law should have been, of course, if it's all already tcheles, then it doesn't need tzitzis. If the room is filled with svarim, it doesn't need a mezuzah. To which he was going to then make the argument of, your people are all holy. We don't need the establishment of the kahuna. Why do we have Aharon establishing himself as a Kohen Gadol? Because you see, just like in Halacha, if the garment is full of tchelos, it doesn't need tzitzis. Just like a garment is full of tzvarim, it doesn't need... So why do you think we need... We should be just like that. So he actually thought, says the Maral, that Moshe was going to respond and say, it's potter, it doesn't need anything. At which point he was going to make his argument, we don't need the Kohen. Except, Moshe says, it does need it. And then they start to laugh. And then they say, well, that's ridiculous. We actually thought you were going to say, because what was logical to them is that it would not need it. They were expecting that as the logical approach, at which point they would then make their argument double, we don't need these Kohanim. To which Moshe says, it doesn't make a difference. The Torah says every four-cornered garment needs to have tzitzis. I don't care what color it is. Every room needs to have a mezuzah. I don't care what's inside the room. To which they then respond with laughter. His chilu litzachik. They then start to laugh. Chaim Shmulevitz points out here, there's one other very significant thing which the Mishnah does not include there in the kinah, taiva, and kavod, and jealousy, and honor, and desire of taking a person out of this world. The other major factor is what we call leitzanus, is mockery, is making jokes. When you poke fun at something, then you can destroy an entire structure, an entire room, in a minute. Anyone who's ever been in a classroom in any type of lecture knows, no matter what the lecture is, no matter how powerful or inspiring it is, if there's one wisecrack that somebody makes, you can ruin the entire presentation with a joke, with two people snickering in the corner of the room. When you don't take things seriously, when you poke fun at things, when you play around with what we call leitzanus, which is joking and mockery, ruins everything. So when Korach and his group, as they were expecting Moshe to say, it's not obligated, at which point they would then say, we don't need you, and he said, it is, then they turn to mockery. They turn to, this is a joke, this is laughable, this doesn't make any sense. And that's one of the most powerful tools if you want to be mevatel something, you want to negate something, you want to show that it doesn't have significance. Mockery is the most powerful tool. When you read through Sefer Mishlei, all of Proverbs is very strongly against, many, many psukim and verses against the concept of the late, of the one who makes a mockery of things. A thousand words of Musar will have no impact on somebody who likes to make a mockery of things, because they don't allow anything in. Everything is a joke. Everything it doesn't have any value. And the destructive nature of that to those around them is extremely powerful, and it's pointed out here by Korach. That's one of the tools that they used as well. And I'll point out something else which is very fascinating. The way that Rashi records what Korach does is it says, Hilbishu Taliso Shekulon Tcheles. He put all of these 250 members in garments which were made out of Tcheles and brought them before Moshe and asked, what's the law, Moshe, as far as Tzitzis goes? So Maral asks a very simple question. Korach has an intellectual argument to make. He expected the answer to be that it doesn't need tzitzis, which he was pointing, he was going to say, well, then we don't need you. Why does he have them dress up in their clothing and come before Moshe, at which point, that's what Rashi says, they dressed up in their clothing, they came before Moshe, and he said, do they need tzitzis or not? Why didn't he just come over to Moshe and start an intellectual debate and say, Moshe, if there's a garment which would be made out of all of tchelos, doesn't need tzitzis, why do I have to be wearing them for? 250 people wearing, what's the point of that? So what else is a fascinating answer to this? Says the Maral, Kadeshi Yiru Yisroel Chidush, that the Jewish people should see that which is going on. Masayim v'chamishim anoshim malbushim v'tcheilas. 250 people parading through town all wearing these clothing. What's going on over here? V'yedu hakol asher cholok al Moshe. What would have been if Korach came to Moshe and he would have said, he would have asked this question. So you have 3 million people in the Jewish people, right? So Korach comes, he's online with everybody else asking a question. He asks the question, and Moshe answers, and says, that's ridiculous. And he starts to laugh, and they throw him out, and that's the end of the story. And it didn't make it into the news, nobody picked up on it, it wasn't, emailed on Facebook, nothing happened. So Korach says, I have a better idea. And he paraded 250 people wearing tcheles shirts through town first on their way to Moshe. What happens when you look out your window and you see 250 people wearing these odd tcheles clothing as they walk by? What's going on? What are they doing? And by the time, says the Maral, Korach gets to Moshe with his 250 people wearing chelas klot, now he's got everybody's attention. Now he's got the Jewish people curious as to what's Korach's rebellion about? What's he talking about? At which point Korach then, now he's got everyone's attention, and now we can say, Madua tisnasu al kahal Hashem, why are you exalting yourself over the congregation of Hashem? We are all holy. The Ramban writes later in the Parsha, that he gathered, the Torah itself says, if you'll see, you can flip to verse 18 and 19, after they were all told to take their fire pans, which is all part of the story, which we're not going to get into in detail now. But in verse 19, Korach gathered the entire assembly to the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the glory of Hashem appeared to the entire assembly. He gathered everybody together. And the Ramban writes that he said to them, I'm not fighting for my honor, I'm fighting for your honor, he said to the Jewish people. Because your firstborns were supposed to be the ones who were going to be the Kohanim. It was your children who were all supposed to have a chelek, a portion of being able to serve Hashem. And Moshe gave it to his brother, Aharon. So Korach says, you think I'm here for myself? You think I'm here for my... It's for you! Right, which is... He started because he was jealous of his own not getting picked as the leader of his tribe. So he starts a whole argument against Moshe against Aharon, and the way that he sells it to the people is that he's not doing it for himself, he's doing it for them. It's your children who I'm standing up for. Your firstborns were the ones who otherwise would have had this ability to be in the Beis HaMikdash, to be the liaison between the Jewish people and Hashem, and they were not able to, and therefore it's for your honor and your glory that I stand up for and being able to do this. That is as the Ramban explains what Korach himself was saying as far as that goes. Now this gets the Jewish people into trouble. This is what gets the Jewish people into trouble. In verse 22 or 21, I should say, right after all the people have gathered together, so Hashem now appears and says to Moshe and to Aaron to separate from this Edah, the Achala Osam Kirogan, I'm going to destroy them all. And the Ramban explains that this was a reference to the Jewish people as an entirety. The whole of the Jewish people were the ones who were about to be destroyed. And why were they going to be destroyed? So the Ramban says, because they came, they were curious, and then when Moshe said to do this test, they stood around to see what would happen. They wanted to know. Maybe Korach's going to be right. He got all of their attention. They all gathered. Moshe puts this test out. Everyone's going to take their fire pans and burn the incense, and we'll see who Hashem accepts. And the people all stayed to see what would happen. Says the Ramban, they were all deserving of death at that moment. Here you have Moshe, the prophet of Hashem, who was established Aharon as the priest.
Question.
And now some guy gets up there and says, you did this on your own. Well, how could you put Aaron in this place? We are all holy. We don't need this. Who did Moshe say was the one who told him to do this to Aaron? This is Moshe saying he got it from Hashem. Everything in the Torah comes directly from Moshe to Hashem. He's the source of it. And now Korach says, I don't believe it. Moshe says, we're going to do a test. And the people say, see what happens. In that moment, says the Ramban, that they all stood around to see, maybe it will be our firstborns. Maybe Moshe Taka made this up. Let's see what happens. It says about in that moment, they were all Morid B'Malchus. They were all rebelling against the king, Moshe in that sense, which is rebelling against Hashem, he writes, and they all deserve to die.
Because no one spoke up against them?
Because the people all needed to have either stood up against them or could have just ignored it. But the fact that they all came to see what would happen was they wanted to see what was going to happen. Maybe he's right.
Everyone likes to see a good fight.
Right? So when the good fight is against your source of life, then there's no place for a good fight. But that's exactly right. Everybody likes a good fight. And Korach was aware of that, but which leads me into the very last section for today. When does this incident take place? This is a very important point. When does this take place? So chronologically speaking, where are we? What was last week's parsha? Parsha of the spies. And what happens during the Parsha of the spies? Is the decree that the Jewish people are going to spend 40 years in the desert, and that the generation that left Egypt is actually going to die in the desert, and they're not going to be able to continue into Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's Korach's argument that he's making when he says, we are all holy, why are you exalting yourself? He's arguing, I didn't even read this inside, as Rashi says in Pasuk Gimel, Har be yoyser mi, that you've taken too much for yourself. We all heard from Hashem at Har Sinai, the Aseret HaDibros, therefore why did you make your brother the Kohen? Why did you make him into the Kohen Gadol, into the Kahuna? We all can serve in that capacity on our own. When did that actually happen? And there's a funny dichotomy here in terms of when the story is being presented to us and what his argument is. When was Aharon made into the Kohen? Was that in any recent event, or did that happen like several parshas ago, much earlier in their stay in the desert? We're already into the second year of their journey into the desert, when the Mishkan was already established. They've been there for a while. How long ago was Aharon established as the Kohen by Moshe? So I'm an exact date, but it was a long time ago. It was not right now. This is so the argument is being presented to us following the story of the episode of the spies, but the text, the context of the argument is something which had actually happened a long time ago. So when was their actual argument? When did they take up this issue that Aaron shouldn't have been established as a Kohen? So there's a machlokas, there's a dispute among the commentators exactly where to put this story. Ibn Ezra writes that this actually happened much earlier, and it's out of order. He doesn't give a reason why it's placed here, but that this rebellion actually took place right after Aharon was appointed, that Korach took up his issue and started this rebellion. The Ramban disagrees with this. The Ramban says it's not the case at all, and he writes in a very beautiful way, which I will share with you. Says the Ramban. V'hinei Yisrael b'hiyosan b'midbar Sinai. When the Jewish people were traveling through this Midbar Sinai following the giving of the Torah, le'iru lahem shumra. Things were not going badly for them. Things were going pretty well in terms of them and their relationship with Hashem. Says the Ramban, and we had some bumps along the way. Gam b'davar ha'egel, even after the golden calf, but the amount of people who actually died during that episode, not so many, says the Ramban. And Moshe put himself out to daven for them. He goes back up to Har Sinai for 40 days just to daven for them. Comes back and says, I have achieved forgiveness for you. And the Jewish people had a love of Moshe kenafshem. They loved him like themselves. And they listened to him. And if somebody, during their original months through the desert, would have raised a finger against Moshe, they would have been stoned on the spot. People wouldn't have tolerated it. Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe, who went up to Har Sinai and gave us the Torah. Moshe went back up there to beg for our forgiveness. Moshe was leading us. You have something to say against Moshe Rabbeinu? Says the Ramban, it's unheard of. L'chein soval korach gedulas Aharon, so that when Aharon was appointed Kohen Gadol, he had to tolerate it. V'savlu ha-b'choyrim ma'ilas ha-levim. And all of the firstborns had to tolerate the fact that they lost the ability to serve, and it was given to the Levim, because Moshe was untouchable. Like, what were you going to say about him? You couldn't. Aval bevoyim al midbar paran, but recently, when they entered into the midbar paran, into the different deserts, the nisrufu be'esh taver, the last two parshas, because we had a lot of problems. They were burned with the fire after their complaining, then they had the complaints against the mon, and people were dying left, and people were dying right, and then they sinned with the meraglim. V'lo hispalel Moshe aleihem, v'lo batzla ha'gzeirim him. Moshe there did not daven to be mevatel that gzeir. When Hashem said, these people are not going into the land, Moshe did not daven that they should. He davened that they shouldn't all die, but he does not daven that they should enter into the land, and therefore, mesu nesiei kol ha'shvatim b'mageifa, all of those 10 leaders who came back, they all died in front of the people in a plague right there in the spot. And nigzer al kol ha'am she'amusu b'midbar. And the rest of the generation, they weren't going to die immediately. Moshe achieved that, but they weren't going to enter into the land. They were all going to die in the desert. Oz Haisa Nefesh Kol Ha'am Mara. Then the people were bitter because they had failed. And because of their failure, they weren't going into Eretz Yisrael. V'hayu omrim b'libam ki yavo lehem b'divrei Moshe takoilas. Now, whose fault was it that they were going to die in the desert? It's their fault. I mean, the spies came back. They all believed the spies. They all said, Nitna Rosh v'nashuva Mitzrayim, let's appoint a new head and head back to Egypt. We're done with this. And that was the end of them. But now they were bitter. Now the decree is set. They're all going to die in the desert. And they amrum belibam, and they said in their heart, it's because we've been following the words of Moshe. Ve'oz, says the Ramban. And then, in that atmosphere, in that culture, with the people who've been decreed upon that they will die in the desert, that they will never see the land flowing with milk and honey, that their children will, but they won't. Az matza korach makom lachlok al maisav. Then Korach sees his jealousy that's been raging since his younger nephew has been appointed the leader. Now he's got a room to lodge a complaint. Now he can say, what's with this Cohen business? How come the firstborns all lost it? What's, you guys are going to sit quietly while you lost the ability to have your firstborns and it's given to the kahuna? How come Moshe is taking all the authority for himself? Now, says Ramban, it comes up. So the Torah is recording it exactly where it is chronologically, exactly after the episode of the spies of last week's Parsha. As soon as we finish that, Vayikach Korach. Even though what he's complaining about happened months and months before. Aaron wasn't recently appointed Kohen Gadol. The firstborns didn't recently lose their ability to serve. The Kohanim had it for a long time already. Why is he complaining about it now? Because now he's got an environment. Now he's got a culture that's right for him to lodge a complaint. And that is possibly one of the most significant aspects and lessons of the entire story of the rebellion, is where it's being taught to us. The Torah is telling us the rebellion against the authority of Moshe months after it happened. Would have made sense if right away somebody jumped up and said, but when it happened, no one had any complaints. No one had any questions about the authority of Moshe, about the leadership of Moshe, about following Moshe. So what are we going to say? Moshe says that Hashem wanted Aaron to be the Kohen Gadol, that's what Hashem wants. If Moshe says the firstborns have lost the rights and it's going to the Kohanim, that's what Hashem wants. But when you're destined to die, when this generation was decreed that they're not going anywhere, they're done, they're finished, the mara, the bitterness of the people, matza korach, says the Ramban. Then Korach found a place to fight with Moshe, and he found the people that were willing to listen. And so the people, when they see this parade of the 250, and in their hearts they're already grumbling, yeah, let's see what's going on. So as Josh, like, everybody likes to pick a fight. Not always. But when you're already angry, and you're already bitter, and you're misplacing your anger and your bitterness, not on where it belongs, which is on yourself, but on something external, in this case, Moshe, so then, yeah, everybody's interested in a fight. And as Ramban writes later, and their interest in this fight really should have cost them their lives. Moshe has to daven for them in verse 22, which I didn't read. Don't kill them all. But their interest in hanging out, their interest in seeing what's going to happen, that their possibility, I don't know, maybe Korach is right, that in alone, in of itself, already was deserving of a punishment, that they questioned the authority of Moshe, that they joined in with Korach to see what was going to happen. That is as the Ramban says it as far as that, which is interesting. In other words, it's over Shavuos we give a shir from Kain and Hevel, and those of you who will first be coming during the summer Bina, but that same idea of Kain's anger, and Kain's the first person who's angry, in terms of where there's always the issue of the misplaced anger. When a person gets angry, as to whose actions that were the cause of the anger, and where does the anger manifest itself, are often very different. So here also, they're the ones who are responsible for their own death. But the anger comes out against Moshe and against Aaron and against the Levium, as opposed to their own personal behavior, as is so often the case. All right, those are the three first psukim of the parsha, the beginning of the discussion of the rebellion.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.